that a monkey?
What the hell is that?
Somebody talk to me, man.
Turn right heading
205.
Hello and welcome to episode 152 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here is my lone co-host today. It is Angie Han.
Hi! By the way, people who listened to our episode last week, we told you Perry wasn't dead. She's still alive despite La La Land losing Best Picture.
I survived La La Land losing Best Picture. I'm still a little bitter about how it happened, though. But that's a discussion for another place, another time. Christy is not with us this week because she is lucky enough to get to go to South by Southwest. I am insanely jealous. I'm sure she's going to tell us all about it when she gets back from Austin. So, the plan for this episode. First up, Angie's going to highlight two movies that might not be on your radar that you should check out. It is Keddy and Headshot, and then we're going to roll into our big review of the week, which is a review of Kong Skull Island. So, Angie, first 5 minutes is all you. Have at it.
All right, yeah, so I just wanted to take a minute to, as Perry said, kind of put the spotlight on two movies that I don't think are getting a ton of attention, and they're not really big movies, but at that I think that you guys might like. So the first one is, I spent a bitterly cold day last weekend venturing outside because I just had to watch Keddy, which I always call Keddy the cat documentary because nobody actually knows what Keddy is. But it's actually just like, it's a documentary about like the street cats of Istanbul. Like they just kind of like run the town. They do whatever the fuck they want. Like they're just like in and out. Like, and then they, you know, they have some talking heads with like the people that interact with them, and like, you know, some of the cats have relationships with people and stuff. But yeah, I feel like it's been kind of like pitched as a feature length cat video. And it is kind of that, because trust me, there are so many, like, if you like animals, and especially if you like cats, there are so many just, like, really adorable, like, heart-meltingly adorable shots of, like, kitties being cute, and, like, kitties, like, playing around. There's, like, kittens, there's, like, big cats, there's, like, all kinds of cats. It is so adorable.
Well, I'm sold.
Yeah, right? But it's actually, you know, it goes a little bit deeper than that. It's not literally just picture that's just, like, an 80 minutes of watching cats, although, you know, between us, I would have been okay with that. So there's actually,
like, I would have been fine with that as well. I also watched those live 24-hour kitten cams all day, so I'm sure I would have been fine just watching cats for an entire movie.
Right? I went in being like, I'm going to hate it when the people talk, because I don't care about them, I care about the cats. But, like, actually, there are some, like, kind of interesting things that the people talk about. Like, there's a really light, I don't want to say spirituality because that makes it sound much heavier than it is. It does kind of touch upon the way these cats, like, bring meaning to these people's lives, like, what they mean to them, like, what these people do for the cats, what that does for the people, like, the way the cats really just kind of encapsulate the soul of the city. Like, so it does touch upon a lot of that stuff. Not so much that you're like, oh, man, I haven't seen a cat in, like, 15 minutes and I'm miserable. But, you know, enough to kind of give it a little bit more depth and make it a little bit more than just watching YouTube clips for an hour and a half.
What's wrong with watching YouTube clips for an hour and a half?
Nothing, but then you probably don't want to leave the house and have to pay for a movie ticket to do that.
Fair.
I think even in New York, it's only playing in one theater, so I'm not honestly sure what the availability is, but I'm hoping that it'll roll out to more cities soon, or at least be available to stream or something. Just keep it on your radar, especially if you like animals. It's a really just, like, heartwarming, like, you know, fun experience. And then the next movie I wanted to highlight is
Polar Opposite.
Yeah. It's actually could not be more different from Keddy. It's Headshot. It's a film that I caught last fall at TIFF, so I might have talked about it at the time. I honestly don't remember at this point. But if you like The Raid, it's the new action movie starring, I'm going to butcher his name, Iko Uwais, nope. I guess? Is that how you say it?
I have no clue. I try to not say it out loud so as not to offend him.
Okay, well, the really kick-ass action star at the center of The Raid, whose name may or may not be pronounced Iko Uwais, is the lead in Headshot. And as a, like, movie, like, as, like, something that has, like, a dramatic narrative and all that, it's, like, it's nonsense. It's very silly. Like, the really dumb parts are always, like, when they try to have plot. But as a way to show off just, like, what this man can do, the way he can move with his body, the way he, like, fights, and the way, like, you know, that the directors, who are called the Mo Brothers, they're a couple of Indonesian directors, the way they shoot him, like, as a way to just kind of show off that stuff, as a showcase for action, it is so good. It is so exciting. It's so fun. I think this is one that's also been kind of like, again, it's one of those movies that even in New York, it's not playing at a ton of places, but I think it's available on iTunes now. So if you're kind of in the mood, if you're like at home and you're just like, I'm in the mood to watch someone like a dude like beat up a bunch of other dudes and everyone gets really bloody and stuff, then like this is going to hit the spot. Like if you're like, I want to watch something that's just like The Raid, but not exactly, then yeah, this is something for you to check out. So yeah, I have presented you with two very different choices, depending on whether you're in the mood for something cute and cuddly or something really bloody and action-packed.
Wow, that's like my heart. It's like being torn in two directions that I love oh so much.
Yeah, well, there are two films to keep on your radar even as we roll into the season of more and more wide releases.
Alrighty, so the time has come. Our big review of Kong Skull Island. Here is the IMDb synopsis. A team of explorers and soldiers travel to an uncharted island in the Pacific, unaware that they are crossing into the domain of monsters, including the mythic Kong. Yep, that's accurate. That is what the movie's about. So, I had very, very high hopes for Kong Skull Island because it's got some of my favorite working actors in the movie right now. I was very excited to see some Brie Larson, Tom Hiddleston, Toby Kebbell, who I love to death. There was Samuel Jackson, John C. Reilly. There's so many great people in this. And I was also really excited to see Jordan Vogt Roberts' follow-up to The Kings of Summer, which, if you haven't seen The Kings of Summer, that is a must-watch. It is a great coming-of-age story, super intimate, great character development. The relationship between the characters is just incredibly well done. And then we get this, which, I mean, that makes it sound like I'm teeing it up to be the most negative review ever. So the issue with Kong Skull Island is when it comes to monster v. monster action, and, you know, what you would want from a Kong movie in terms of seeing Kong and seeing Kong kick ass, holy shit, does this deliver. The action sequences in this, I think, are incredible, and you know, it's funny because we've got Beauty and the Beast coming up, and one of my complaints about Beauty and the Beast is I didn't really love the CG Beast design. When you watch Kong Skull Island, the way Kong looks is kind of remarkable, just the details on his face, and the movie does a great job of making him feel like a character that you can get behind and believe in. It's just so well done. And then there's the humans, and they suck. The humans suck. I didn't really like any of them. I still like looking at Toby Kebbell, but none of their characters are particularly well-developed. And the dialogue here is, it's not just that the jokes fall flat. Some of the dialogue is bad to the point of me suspecting that it's also just bad delivery. I don't know. The human characters just really didn't do it for me, and it kind of, I was really disappointed that I didn't get the complete package out of this.
I was also kind of like lukewarm on it. Like, there are things about it that I love. I completely agree with you that Kong is a great character through and through. Like, first of all, he has way more like kind of backstory and character development than almost all the human characters. And he's one of those CG creations that is so good and so lifelike and so real that I honestly kept forgetting that I was just staring at a bunch of pixels and nothing else. It is actually incredible, like, how seamless it is. It's so seamless you barely even notice it. Like, it was like Jungle Book level seamless. And Toby Kebbell and Terry Notary, who are both veterans of the Apes movies, I think are the actors that actually bring him to life, and they do so much with it, where just like with his body language and stuff, you get such a good sense of like who he is on the, like who he is like from an interior perspective, even though, you know, he's not a human and he doesn't get like dialogue or have like, you know, traditionally human stuff to kind of rely on there. So I thought he was fantastic. The human characters are all like, there's like a dozen of them, which I guess is like maybe they wanted this to be like the story of a big doomed expedition, like fine, but as you said, like, you know, most of them don't really get that much to do. Like, I did think that John C. Reilly, like, he is the character that made me laugh. He's the character that made me not cry, but like, you know, he's like by far the best character. He's the only human character that gets as much development as Kong does, frankly. And I also thought that Samuel L. Jackson was really, really good as the kind of military leader who not so secretly, is actually much more comfortable in wartime than in peace. So he kind of jumps at the chance to go on this expedition, even though the Vietnam War is winding down. Oh, and by the way, if you didn't know, it takes place during, like, right at the tail end of the Vietnam War. And in case you ever forget, there's like 8 million references to Apocalypse Now and other kind of films that are scattered throughout the movie. I was kind of okay. I guess the reason I wasn't as disappointed with the way this movie treats human characters is because I didn't expect it to do very well on that front to begin with. Because, I mean, it's not the same movie as Godzilla. They do take place in the same universe with different filmmakers and whatnot, but it was kind of a similar, like, you know, I feel like with these kinds of movies, you're going there for the monsters. They've already established a precedent with Godzilla of, like, this universe doesn't really give a shit about the human characters or if any of them come back or whatever. So, like, I went in kind of not expecting much, and I didn't get much, but I wasn't upset about it. I think the thing that kind of made me... The thing that kind of, I walked away kind of like, I can't believe they did it that badly, because I think a lot of things in this movie were done really well. But there's a lot of, like, it's a really gorgeously shot movie.
Oh, yeah. It's like the coloring that we see in the marketing campaign is in the final feature, and it makes all the visuals look really stunning and unique.
Yeah, I agree. And then the, you know, as you said, the fighting scenes are really good. I want to talk about the creatures a little bit later, but one thing I thought that the movie did not do very well is kind of... established. So you see a lot of, like, Kong kind of interacting with other creatures, and at some points if he's even fighting other creatures. I don't think that's a spoiler, right?
No. I mean, that's okay. All been all over the trail. I mean, even the fact that there's multiple creatures, the trailers haven't held back, and that's one of the first quotes I saw from Jordan Vogt Roberts is he said, "I'm not going to save the monster until the end. You're going to get monsters right at the start," and he delivers on that. He delivers on that big time. There's no, like, masking them for the big moment at the end. This is a monster movie.
It absolutely is, but the problem is that, so when Kong is fighting the other monsters, the movie establishes right away that Kong is just this, like, fearsome creature. He's like God. He's, you know, practically indestructible. But he has to be destructible for this movie to have any fucking stakes at all. The problem is, I don't think the movie does a very good job of kind of letting you understand, like, what would hurt him, what would kill him, how injured he is, or how well he feels. So in a lot of scenes where he is, you know, in fight sequences, I kind of just felt like it felt so much to me like I was just, like, you know, they're exciting, but after a while I was like, I'm just watching pixels crash into other pixels until the clock runs out.
Yes. It's kind of funny because I felt the opposite. I think there's a scene earlier on in the movie where you do see Kong get hurt. And I think, I don't want to spoil exactly what that sequence is. Maybe we'll talk about it if we move into spoilers a little later. But there's a scene that happens earlier in the beginning where I think I got a good sense of Kong being hurt. And not that signified that monsters can hurt him in a particular way, but just seeing him wounded at the beginning, I think, set the stage in terms of this is a character that can die. And I was fearing for his life the whole time.
I got that he can die. It's just
not so much the people, though.
No, not so much with people. It's just that when he was fighting them, like, you know, it's kind of like when you're watching two big characters face off. You kind of want to have a sense of, like, you know, who's got the upper hand, how much, like, you know, are we running out of time? Like, is this character really close to death, or does he still have a lot of fight left in him? And those are the kind of specifics that I was having a hard time gauging while watching this movie, and I think that was, like, my one biggest complaint about it. But speaking of the monster fights, the Skull Crushers, oh my god. Yeah. If you've seen the trailers, they're these, like, big, like, you know, this big hideous lizard things, and I swear to God, the first time that you see one in the movie, despite the fact that I'd seen them all over the marketing stuff, the first time I saw one in the movie, like, I gasped. Like, that is just, it is amazing creature design, like, from everything from the way they look to the way they move, just, like, the first time I saw one, I was so shocked because of how, like, creepy it was. It sent a chill down my spine.
All the creatures, too. There's, I mean, you got Kong, you have these Skull Crushers, and the movement, the way they move around, you know, their battlefield of sorts. They're terrifying. They're absolutely terrifying. And even, you know, the monster that's featured in the trailer is that big, the spider-looking one. That has a great sequence as well. I think all of that kind of stuff was very well done. The only lives that felt completely expendable to me were the humans, and, you know, everybody kind of falls into their little stereotype, and you could pick and choose at the very beginning which ones you think are going to die, and I'd like to bet you're going to wind up being pretty accurate. And it's like, I thought Samuel L. Jackson was probably perfectly cast in that kind of role. It's just, at one point, he stops being an interesting character, and he repeats the same things and the same beats over and over, and I didn't really buy what he was trying to do, so that character kind of fell a little flat towards the end for me, and I stopped caring. And I'm a little sad that, you know, Brie Larson and Tom Hiddleston are kind of made out to be the heroes of this movie in a way. They're supposed to, in an ensemble, they're kind of supposed to be the ones that you identify with. And while that is true to an extent, I wish there was more to them, except that he was kind of, you know, the tracker and she was the photographer. I mean, what more to them was there? Because I didn't get anything, and I was a little disappointed that the guys from Straight Outta Compton, Corey Hawkins and Jason Mitchell, didn't have a little more to do. I mean, Corey Hawkins didn't have any layers whatsoever. He was delivering his lines perfectly fine. It was not a performance issue. There just isn't all that much to that character. And then with Jason Mitchell, it's just a little unfortunate. I think he did the most with what he got, but he is the perfect example of an actor in this movie that suffers from bad writing, and particularly bad comedic writing. Some of the jokes, not only did they fall really flat, but then with the editing, it's like the editing left just enough room after the joke was delivered and didn't work for you to be like, oh, that was awkward, and then it moves on.
There's like him and this one other character have a dynamic that's like kind of jokey, but honestly, the first three times they had an exchange, like I was like, wait, was that supposed to be funny? But somehow it kind of grew on me by the end. Like, I guess I kind of started to get into their like weird rhythm.
The other guy grew on me a little more than, I don't think Jason Mitchell's comedy ever improved, but I started to get used to the other guy. Unique delivery and his weird personality, and that I started to find a little endearing.
Okay, so then thinking about this movie a little bit more and thinking back, like, I guess what I realize is, like, this kind of feels like you just watched a superhero movie, but not from the perspective of the superhero, from the perspective of the scared civilians running around. Because it's essentially what it is. It's like Kong in this movie is, you know, there's Kong, there's like the Skull Crushers. It's like a monster-on-monster movie, and the people are just kind of like, there.
That's actually a very good comparison.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad. Because when I thought of it, I was like, am I crazy? Or is that actually like exactly what this is? But like, the other reason that the humans are there is because this is a movie that wants to have thematic weight. It wants to be like about war and about Vietnam and about, like, you know, the heart of darkness. Because, yeah, once again, let's not forget it's an Apocalypse Now like riff. And they keep having characters kind of like speak in these themes and kind of underline these themes over and over and over. And it's not like wrong, like it's not incorrect, but it's also just kind of feels very like, I don't think the themes that they're trying to project onto this movie mesh as well with the actual plot and what we're actually interested in as kind of the people making it probably hoped.
Okay. All right, so do we want to give a brief recommendation whether or not to see this before moving into spoilers for a quick 2 minutes?
I mean, I'm not gonna say don't watch it. I'm not gonna say watch it. It's fun. If you are gonna watch it, I would recommend watching it on the big screen because, you know, there's lots of big monster action. I would not recommend watching it in 3D because I watched it that way and it gave me a freaking headache. So, yeah.
I think it's well worth watching for the action and for Kong. I'm just a little disappointed because I expected more from Jordan Vogt Roberts from the character department and more from this cast too. So there you go. That's our non-spoiler review. Now we're going to discuss spoilers super quickly because there are some that are well worth talking about. So if you don't want to hear spoilers for Kong Skull Island, we'll see you next weekend. All right, so spoilers. First off, just to clarify what I was getting at before, the brief spoiler is that, you know, when the helicopters go down at the beginning and Kong is all shot up with bullets, and then he goes to the water and he starts washing his wounds, that to me was the perfect way to show huge, gigantic King of Island can be hurt, and he's sad, and he could die. And especially when they built up the whole mythology about his parents getting killed by the Skull Crushers, then I'm like, oh, he can really be killed by these creatures, especially the big one. So that worked for me.
It's not that I didn't think he could get hurt, I just wanted a little bit more specificity in terms of, like, you know, like when you're watching, to make the, you know, to draw upon the superhero movie comparison again, when you're watching, like, you know, Captain America fight Iron Man, you kind of see, you can kind of tell just from the way, from, you know, the dialogue and from the performance and, like, just the way it's shot, like, how much kind of energy, well, like, if their energy sources are depleted, like, how much fight they still have left in them. And I didn't think that the movie always did such a good job, and it particularly because I don't think he does a really good job at all of establishing what it takes to kill a Skull Crusher, how you can tell if that thing is injured, like, how you can tell if that thing is tired. As scary as they are, and as much as I kind of feel like maybe he didn't want to disperse the mystique by showing us too much, it just kind of felt like, you know, okay.
That is a very fair criticism and something that crossed my mind during the big showdown towards the end.
Especially because there's like a couple fake-outs where you think it died and then it didn't.
Yeah,
and you're just like, well, how the fuck would I know?
And especially because that was supposed to be one of the redeeming moments, not, I guess redeeming is the wrong word, but the hero moments maybe for the humans where they help Kong and it's like, oh, well, how are they going to help Kong? And it's, you know, there is a resolution to that, obviously, but it doesn't mean as much when you can't figure out, you know, press this button or stab here in order to kill this, you know?
Yeah.
So that didn't mean as much, but we should probably talk about the end credit thing, which was spoiled a little for me, because if you sit there and you watch, you wait there for the thing that plays after the credits, there's, at the very end of the credits, there's rights for the creatures that are shown in the end credits. So I'm like, oh, I know I'm seeing Mothra and some other stuff here. Okay, well, that's that. But, you know, it's just unfortunate that the characters didn't work as well, because that makes the ending not as exciting in a way, just because of the people who are in that. I feel like if I was a little more hyped about, you know, Monarch and Corey Hawkins' character, seeing them all meeting together in a room and discussing this stuff would have had, like, an extra little boost that it needed, but instead it was just like, oh, you know, I'm kind of getting what you promised me already, so cool, let's get there.
It was spoiled for me by the guy running the press screening, who I assume was an employee of the theater, where he was like,
did they tell you to stay?
He was like, you're not allowed to take out your phones even once the credits start, because there's a tie-in thing at the end, and he's like, yeah, that ties into Godzilla, so I was like, okay.
Oh. Well, they told us not to get up and leave either.
Yeah, but, like, I feel like even with that scene, though, like, once again, you're not going to see these people again, because, like, Godzilla takes place in, you know, what is 2014, whatever, like, it's probably going to be set.
No, you're not going
to
see
them. Right, so, like, I didn't really care about that. It's obviously there to kind of, like, get you, remind you that Godzilla is still out there, that these other characters could show up. One thing I did think was interesting was, like, I walked out and I was just like, so Godzilla and Kong, who are both giant monsters that people have been running scared of from in other movies, are both, like, kind of good guys now? So, like, I'm like, what are they gonna fight about? Like, who loves the humans more? Like, okay, sure, we'll see.
It's an interesting setup. I'm really curious to see where we go from here and how this whole thing comes together, because it's just interesting how, you know, Godzilla, many were saying, oh, I want more monster fighting, and that focused on some very human elements of that story, whereas this is the mostly monster fighting, and now I'm complaining about the opposite, but
it's a hard balance to strike.
We shall see. This shared cinematic universe is not going anywhere anytime soon. So that is our review of Kong Skull Island. Thank you guys so much for listening. You know what to do. Please go on over to iTunes, where you can comment, rate, and subscribe to this podcast. Then we also have our website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on Twitter at popcornprosecco. Please go on over to Facebook, where you can like us as well. And then all three of us are all over the internet. Angie, plug yourself, and then you're a Christy Pro, too.
Okay, all right. So you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and actually, as of, this is my first episode where I'm no longer with Slashville.
That's so exciting!
Yeah.
I forgot that your plug is going to be different this time.
I know, I feel like I'm going to say it wrong in the future, but we'll just edit that out of future episodes if it happens, right?
Okay,
so yeah.
You'll never know.
Once again, you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and you can find my writing at Mashable.com, including my review of Kong Skull Island.
And huge congratulations to you.
Thank you. And you can find Christy on Twitter at KRISTYPUCHKO, and she writes all over the web, but you can find her career highlights at decadentcriminals.com, and definitely keep an eye out there for her updates from South by Southwest.
Absolutely. And I am on Twitter and Instagram at PNemiroff, and I am on the Collider Videos YouTube channel. So thank you again for listening. We'll see you next week.
Yesterday I was a crackpot, but today...